All right, go ahead.
Hi, this is George Teague. Before I say anything more, I need you to hit that like and subscribe button on the YouTube channel. We do appreciate you guys for doing that. And man, we got an amazing lineup. Yes, we have some special guests today. Luke and Ed are going to be on talking with me and JT about the Pac-12 and what's going on there with them. Is this really a good thing about all this alignment, man? How's it going to affect the playoff scope with a 12-team playoff scenario that's supposed to happen next year? Man, so much excitement today. T-Tag starts right now.
Oh, well, you know, I'm back, but obviously a little rusty because I know you couldn't hear the intro, which we usually can do, and other things. But I guess once we, you know, it's like spring football, right? We got to get back in the swing of things. The first day of pads, I got to figure out where all my buttons went.
Hey, you know, that's okay. I was humble and talked about it all last week. Me not being a producer, yours still is a whole lot better than mine, so I appreciate it very much. I'm sorry if I'm lagging behind a little bit too, but I'm working on my new studio that I ain't got finished yet. That's what my walls are all working too, but we'll get to it, man. So I'm excited, JT, about tonight, and I know we need to dive in it real fast. Because you got some special guests on, you want to introduce our guests for this evening?
Yeah, so you've seen Ed before. Ed is he's got a Utah shirt on now. He used to be a resident Tennessee expert.
What happened there?
He moved. He moved. Oh, hold on.
Tree now.
There you go. Say it again, Ed. I had you muted. My bad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I used to live in Knoxville. Now I'm out here in Utah, which used to be Pac-12 country, but now it's Big 12 country. But yeah, I've been a season ticket holder for the Utes here for about 3 years now. So looking forward to talking some Pac-12.
Now, you haven't been in Utah for 3 years, have you? It ain't been that long.
It's coming up on 3 years. Yeah. Oh, so
how long have I been in this damn Discord, man?
I don't know, but Ed, you didn't really get a chance to know me that well last time, but since you're a returning guest, I can put my joke in on you now because I'm trying to figure out what's going on with your room back there. Maybe it's a Utah thing. You just got the one low TV and the one brown couch. I feel like you're in a little straight jacket or something.
My wife got the nice office upstairs. I've been relegated down here to the basement, so this is about as good as it gets.
Okay. And we also have Luke. Luke is our resident our Oregon fan. I thought, based on his background, that he's actually just the equipment manager at at Oregon, because he's got every shoe, seems like, known to man. He's got two helmets. I mean, he's even got some PhD gear back. Tell me, how did you acquire all of this Oregon paraphernalia?
So I went there for college, and University of Oregon does a surplus sale, athletic department surplus sale every year. So they sell helmets, cleats, shoes. So I always would fly out when I'm not a student, since I graduated in 21, and go there and load up on gear.
Nice. Well, I hope you got a deal on that. And I'm sorry if you hear an echo. I hear an echo. Does anybody else hear that? Or is it just me?
Mm-mm. No, it's cool, Maya.
Oh, you know what it is? I have the YouTube video playing in the background. There we go. Now it's gone.
There you go.
All right. Well, you know, let's hop into the first topic. First topic is RIP Pac-12. If you lived under a rock somewhere, you might not have known that UCLA and USC had already decided to head to the Big Ten, or whatever they're going to call it these days. And then we kind of thought it cooled down for about half a second. There was a lot of talk about Washington and Oregon going. Then they decided, nah, not right now. We're going to be fine. And then out of nowhere, Colorado said, you know what? You know, what's Eric Cartman say? Screw you guys, I'm going home. So they went back to the Big Ten or to the Big 12. Then quickly after that, Oregon and Washington followed suit, going to the Big Ten. And then, I don't know, maybe 48 hours later, Arizona State and Utah also packed their bags and said, we're also going to the Big 12. So let's start with you, Luke. How does this really affect the Ducks? How does this affect the conference? How does this affect the coast?
I think the conference is toast. Like, it's gone. The Ducks, I think, come out a winner here. I was getting a little nervous when there was talks that, you know, USC and UCLA got kind of a bigger market. Ducks don't have that market. Being the Pacific Northwest, we don't want them. And then when that talk started coming out about the TV deal, whatever, was not going to go through. And it makes me nervous with recruiting if they're not in a very competitive conference. So the fact that they jumped ship and they landed in the Big Ten gives me some hope.
Well, good. Good. All right. So, Ed, the new Utah fan that kind of thought, I think it was a little bit more scary on your side about possibly not getting an invite to go anywhere else, maybe having to stay and hope that you can pull in San Diego State and some other, I mean, I don't even know who else. I mean, New Mexico and New Mexico State aren't particularly, or even Utah State, aren't definitely good options to bring. But you got out, I guess. But how do you feel about that? Because I don't know that the Big 12 is really the place that you want to be. But if it is, if given the circumstances, maybe this is the best outcome.
Yeah, we were hoping for an invite to the SEC, but unfortunately that didn't come. But I think the Big 12 suits Utah pretty well. They're a team coming over from the Mountain West into the Pac-12. They won the last two Pac-12 championships. They're one of the few teams that when they have changed conferences, they've actually done well. You can't say the same for a Rutgers or a Maryland and some other teams that have moved conferences. So to be able to get that invite, you kind of felt like, you know, the kid in high school getting an invite to prom or something. Like, we got invited to the big dance, so we're going to the Big 12. We renew that rivalry with BYU, which since moving out here, it's the fierceness between the two fan bases is on an SEC level. So I'm so glad we're going to be able to play that every year. That should make for some entertaining television. So really looking forward to moving to that conference. It's probably the third best, I think. And so Utah now has a path to the expanded playoffs. So you got to be happy about that.
All right. So with you, Dad, you being the innocent bystander out here, this was just, I don't know, you was probably at Cowboys camp when this was all happening. And then you just kind of woke up one morning and it is like, hey, there's like four teams left in the Pac-12 who I actually can't. Oh yes, I can. Washington State, Oregon State, Cal and Stanford are the ones that are just kind of out here holding the bag.
Well, I feel bad for the conference as a whole. I think they made some pretty big mistakes, or at least the commissioner did. I hate his first name is George because he really kind of messed this up a little bit. Can you imagine being known for that, man? You're the guy that comes in and you immediately get the downfall of the Pac-12. Good Lord. That's
yeah, I mean, it felt like it was a losing effort, like right from the beginning, right? Because Larry Scott, right? That is his name, right? Larry Scott didn't leave the conference in a great spot. And then you're supposed to come in and clean it up. And it's like you're 14 minutes into the job and everybody's telling you, never mind.
That is right. I do need to say shout out to those people that are in already. William Isaacs, my man, Todd Collectibles, and of course our peeps and James Knox. Thank y'all for tuning in.
Yeah, right and Monica. Monica's in here too. So I apologize. Usually I put your comments on screen, but like I said, this is spring training for me. My extension is gone, so I don't have that ability. So at least everybody can see it. We can acknowledge things as they come in. So please be vocal in the chat if you feel like that you need to. So Luke, Ed, tell me, what went wrong? How did the Pac-12 go from What was it? It was 2012. Oregon is in a national championship game. They've been to two, right? They've been to two national championship games.
Correct.
I can't remember when the other one was. I know one they played Auburn, and then another one they played. I can't remember. Ohio I just State. Know they were there. Ohio State.
Yeah.
And you had USC, who has been a storied program for a long time. And Washington was pretty good in the 90s. Utah's coming up. They've won, was it two straight Rose Bowls?
Rose Bowls, but won two Pac-12 championships. Right.
Two Pac-12 championships, then followed up with two Rose Bowl losses, but two Rose Bowl appearances nonetheless. And then they go, you know, they start making some noise. They go down to Florida and should have won a game, and they didn't, but that's fine, whatever. And now all of a sudden it's just like, who is – it's the conference has become unrecognizable. So if either one of you can chime in and just give me a timeline on like – What are all the missteps? Was it apathy of like, hey, we're a basketball conference, we don't really care about football? Is it the coast in general that is, you know, the Rams are coming back, so we just kind of care about the Rams and the Raiders and the Chargers, but we really don't give a damn because USC is not good right now until Caleb Williams came back? You know, so what happened?
Yeah, I guess I can, Luke, and you can chime in if I leave anything out, but I think
– all right.
It's really a story of arrogance, an embarrassment of missteps. You mentioned our old friend Larry Scott. I mean, he had an opportunity after Texas and Oklahoma announced that they were leaving the Big 12. He had an opportunity to have discussions about combining the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and sort of turned his nose up at. I think a lot of people think it's more like a truck stop conference, the Big 12, and they sort of look down at that conference. And then you had George Kolopkoff, who and a lot of the schools, ESPN offered them a deal of $30 million per school, yep. And the schools told him that's not good enough. And then really it's USC and UCLA who have blood on their hands because they were the first to go, and then it was just domino effect from there. So in a nutshell, that's from my perspective, that's what happened. But Luke, did I leave anything out?
No, spot on, yeah. It's just they balked at that TV deal thinking we'll pass on it, get some more money, and then it just shot them in the foot because then everyone just left.
So then let me ask this, because you say, you know, UCLA and USC have blood on their hands, right. But OU and Texas did the same thing. And that conference did not fall apart. They stood together and they said, hey, this is what it is. We got our deal. We know what we are. We're going to do this. And then we can go expand if we want to. I mean, that's how BYU gets in. That's how Cincinnati gets in. That's how UCF gets in and Houston. And they're like, look, we're good with this. So why was there such an eagerness by all the rest of the schools to be like, well, if they're gone, we're gone?
I think it goes back to that word arrogance. I think the Pac-12, they weren't really looking at other schools to come in because they're like, oh, they can't match up with a Stanford on an academic level. Even Arizona State, once known as a party school, is really upping their level of academics. So you have the sporting side as well as the academics of the Pac-12. And so they weren't willing to bring in, say, a Houston or a BYU. They want to keep a certain standard. And I think ultimately that was their downfall.
First of all, you said Arizona State, once known as a party school.
hey, it's one thing I got to add, just to add to the anomaly that is Ed, the Mr. I work for Tennessee in the marketing department. Yes. So, you know, I'm loyal to the Vols. I'm moving to Utah, and I'm a 3-year season ticket holder. To yes. Oh, by the way, I'm an Arizona State graduate.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm looking at my Arizona State. So that's why I say once known as a party school, but, you know, academic, since I do have a degree from there, I've got to up that level. So, you know, I do have my eye on the Sun Devils as well, for sure.
Well, so let me ask y'all something. I want to get back to the other point. I know how much of it really played into the amount of money that the Pac-12 was making or not making in the TV deals for these guys to jump ship. Was it really about money? Or do you think it was solely about the arrogance, like you said, or was just the money too great somewhere else?
I'll chime in first on just what I think as a non Pac-12 watcher. I think I think it's a little column A and a little column B, because I remember just last year trying to watch some Pac-12 football. I think it was Oregon-Stanford. And whatever cameras they had out there made the game literally unwatchable.
Yeah, it was
blurry. The lighting wasn't right. Like, you couldn't even tell who had the ball. It looked like I was watching a game from the 1960s in 2022, and it was quite embarrassing. But then I think from there, I think the real misstep from George Kliakoff was trying to sell them on another streaming deal, because they had a streaming deal in the Pac-12 network before that was completely mismanaged, I guess. I don't know if mismanaged is the word, or misled, or I'll let you guys give some more insight on that, but it fell apart. It was nothing like the Big Ten network or even the ACC network or the SEC network or even the Longhorn network for that matter. Like, it was something that they were pitched into thinking, hey, we're going to get all these subscribers and this is how you're going to get your money once we get to a certain threshold. And the Pac-12 pitched the schools with, we can get you this Apple TV deal. And once we get to a certain number of subscribers, it's going to get you over the 30 million mark and it's going to be great. And I think all the schools were kind of like, yeah, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice. We're not doing a streaming deal again.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like putting the cart before the horse, because you had a actual cable deal in front of you that you said no to. So anybody want to fill in and add kind of some color commentary on that?
Yeah, I'll jump in. So
yeah, go ahead.
Just the broadcast deals in the past, I feel like it was just quality wasn't there. The times were horrible. They tried to do the whole Pac-12 mm-hmm. after dark. No one's staying up to watch Oregon State versus Cal at, 10:30 Eastern kickoff, maybe 11:30 p.m. Eastern kickoff. And no one's staying up to watch that. So it's just a domino effect of just, poor decisions. It was so hard to watch the past couple of years. And when I was there, it was great. And then you can slowly see the downfall. And ultimately, this is what happens.
Yeah, and Luke, if I'm not mistaken, I think with the Pac-12 network, they wanted to produce that in-house, whereas I think with the Longhorn network, ESPN helps them with mm-hmm. that. Maybe the mm-hmm. other right. conferences have major networks helping produce. That's why it looks
company
so much
backing.
Better.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, right. yeah, I think that was the Pac-12's issue: why the quality was poor, why they didn't have that backing behind them to sell ads. You know, if an advertiser drops out, they don't have a big sales force to go out and get a new advertiser to come in. So they just try to do it themselves.
That's a good call out, is that they were trying to do it themselves. Because I remember I should have pulled the quote. I should have been more prepared. Sorry, audience. But there was a quote that Larry Scott had that was basically alluding to him being like the next big TV executive because of this this Pac-12 network that they were going to do, and he was going to be the head of it, and the conference was going to run it, and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, that didn't go the way that it was supposed to go, which is unfortunate, especially since now we've got schools all over the place in these different conferences. So there's a couple more things that we need to hit with the Pac-12. First, let's talk about the Rose Bowl. So this is just, again, me as the Pac-12 outsider, you're talking about arrogance. If you look up arrogance in a dictionary, it's going to be a picture of the Rose Bowl and how they operate and how they do things, which has always been, it's been a problem for me since the playoffs started, because I really hate New Year's Eve playoff games, and we know that it was only that way because the Rose Bowl was like, I don't care what y'all doing. We're playing our game when we always play it, whatever. I don't care. So what happens with the granddaddy of them all now? Because does the Rose Bowl still hold the same prestige going into the future, like long term, or does it become more of like the Citrus Bowl? Like, it's still a New Year's Six, but it ain't. Let's put it this way. The Rose Bowl was so grand, not just on the West Coast, but like historically, that Alabama's fight song is about getting back to the Rose Bowl. Like, the Rose Bowl is in the words of Alabama's fight song. So that's how big it was. But what do you see going forward? Is it just another New Year's Six? And anybody, no, everybody's going to care only when it's a playoff game?
Yeah. For me, I think, and I should just say, I got to go to the Rose Bowl for the first time. I saw Penn State, Utah. And you talk about arrogance there. Like, you have to take a bus. Like, it's in the middle of a neighborhood, so you have to take a bus to get there. It is such a pain. And the people there, like, we don't want you driving your cars and parking them in our neighborhood. So it was a bit of a just cluster, you know. It was not fun to get to, but once you're there, it's great. And so I thought it was great. The venue is amazing. I'd like to see that to be the national championship game. Whenever like golf tournaments are held on the West Coast, it's great because you could have it a little bit earlier there and the sun's setting, but it's like prime time on the East Coast. So I would like to see the Rose Bowl be the national championship game moving forward.
He's just saying always.
Always, yeah. That should be the venue.
Well, you can hang that up. They're not letting that. Let's see.
In a perfect world, that's what I would like. But I don't know, Luke, what do you think?
Yeah, perfect world, it'd be ideal. But I went Oregon versus Wisconsin pre-COVID season, right before the COVID shutdown. And just historic, pain to get to, but beautiful. And it's a shame that now it really won't be taken as serious. I mean, they'll probably become like a Citrus Bowl where you throw some teams in it and have it. And it is what it is. But I don't think it will hold the same prestige as it is. You're kind of giving up that history of Big Ten and Pac-12. Mm-hmm.
All right. Tangential question, and then I'll bring it back. Of the New Year's Six bowls, which bowl is the worst? You can pick brand or, you know, recognition. I'll tell you which one I think is the most disappointing is the Fiesta Bowl. I thought the Fiesta Bowl, you know, it used to be the exciting game. You know, that's the Boise State, Oklahoma Statue of Liberty thing. And then, like, I watched, who was it? It was Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, which actually was a pretty good game. But you look in the stands and it was like, wasn't nobody there. And I'm not even sure why. This is the fan talking. The Fiesta Bowl seems like the most disrespected of the New Year's Six games. But as a player, it's kind of it's the bowl that I want to play in because it's sponsored by PlayStation and all the players got PlayStations.
Yeah. That's cool. Okay. Yeah. When Oregon was in the Fiesta Bowl, I had a buddy on the team and they got PlayStation. I think they got like a PSVR, a headset. So they hooked them up.
Yeah. So, but what do you think, Ed, were you Googling to see who the six were? I mean, I know.
The Citrus Bowl. Just kind of looking. The Cotton Bowl immediately came to mind, but I don't know. That's in your neck of the woods, right? So I don't know if that's a good option. But I don't know. The Cotton Bowl just for me doesn't register. I was going to say the Orange Bowl just because it's not in that old.
It's not in the OB anymore, for real?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say,
So maybe those two for me.
Okay.
It's going to go with the Orange Bowl too, yeah.
That's fair. I'd have to push back on the Cotton Bowl just because I've actually been to the Cotton Bowl for a playoff game. And that sucker is packed. I mean, the Cowboys Stadium is already like great to begin with, but the being in that stadium and there's that many people in there, even I think the Big 12 championship is played there now. You just get so many people in there in a domed area. It's loud. It's a great atmosphere. But okay, we got about 5 minutes to talk about the future of the playoffs. So as I alluded to before, the playoffs are expanding to 12 teams. It was supposed to be the six highest rated conference champions, and they did that on purpose. And James Knox has a question. I will get to it, James Knox. I'm sorry. Just give me 1 second. They did it on purpose to take the Power Five champions plus one Group of Five champion. And the Power Five now is absolutely a Power Four. So with the SEC being the conference that it is and the Big 12, not Big 12, the Big 10, I really need one of them to rebrand. Yeah, well, look, I've always said if you got a number in your conference, you're doing it wrong. Yeah. In this day and age, you're doing it wrong. You just need to be – you got to get rid of the numbers.
True.
With those two conferences being as big as they are and with all the brands that they have, you know they're going to be trying to push for more at-larges, fewer automatic bids. So my first question is, do you think that regardless of Cal and Stanford's actual football play, let's say they actually got good again, do you think like it's just now impossible for them? Are they always going to be in the outside looking in now? Or do you think they can position themselves to be more of a Notre Dame kind of school? What do you think?
It's got to be the Notre Dame way because there's no way they get in elsewhere.
What? But do you think they even have the capability of being?
Oh,
of can Stanford get back to top five without being in a conference? Can they do it the independent way? And
that's just a dream now. That's all over. Gone, I think. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah,
they're not. Stanford's not going to take in transfers again because the academic level, and they're unwilling. I mean, they have the money; they could spend and be competitive in NIL, but they've proven they're unwilling to do that. So, unlike Notre Dame, who is willing to do those things, I can't see them replicating Notre Dame's success as an independent school.
They're going to be a good group of five. Allen, Stanford, whatever.
Hey, well, you know that's an interesting statement because. You said a good group of five, and I'm immediately thinking, okay, like what kind of group of fives are they? Like, you know, Stanford's actually really not that good at football right now, so maybe they won't be. But then I just thought about it. Cincinnati is no longer a group of five school. Houston is no longer a group of five school. BYU is not a group of five school. UCF is not a group of five school. So it's like all of the teams that used to think that they had a shot at the playoff are now actually in these big conferences that if they actually just win the conference, they're going to get in. Stanford and Cal might quite literally be the best of the rest. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they're smiling, though. They're like, ha, maybe I got you. If they pick up a, I don't know who they said might go with, SMU, some other folks or something.
No, right.
You know, I don't know. I think this, you bring up some really good points about the playoff system. How's it going to look with four power conferences right now? I think it's going to make more people mad at the SEC again.
Yeah, because the SEC is going to get like five teams in.
Yeah. Literally, yeah.
Four in now. But, you pose a question that I put on social media, like, is this good for football? Y'all might have talked about it when I was in the
No, we didn't talk about it. The question I was going to ask, though, is not is it good for football? Is it good for the rest of the sports?
College sports.
Yeah.
No, it's good for football, but I don't know if it's good for everything else because you're leaving a lot of people out. A lot of other sports. It's going to cost them a lot of money to travel.
Yep. There's been pushback by the – or just to interrupt, sorry to interrupt. The Oregon softball team, women's softball team, has a lot of pushback on their social media platforms saying that they picked Oregon because they wanted to be close to home so their parents can go to the games. If they need to go home on a short notice, they can do that. But now it's, I don't know how you're going to juggle school with having to travel, like I'd said, Maryland, Rutgers. It's going to be a nightmare for those smaller sports. Whereas football, it's just you go fly in the day before, fly out that night. Easy. You go back for class. So you play a weekend game. Mm-hmm. I don't know how these other sports are going to survive.
I'm going to call BS to them a little bit, just a little bit, because I do understand everything that they're saying.
Yeah.
But now I think with the way in, even with the smaller sports, they're still getting NIL deals. They're making some money. Yeah.
For sure.
It changes their – I think it's going to start to change their landscape a little bit.
For sure.
You know, your branding changes too now when you're playing all over the country. You're not just playing at home.
Very true.
All right. Well, let's get to this question real quick from James Knox. He said, these events sound more horrible, but it makes so much sense. Did the Pac-12 go after the Big 12 when it was most vulnerable? I think they tried, but I don't think they had a good I don't know if they had a good pitch, because they had a chance, from what I've heard. Oklahoma and Texas were like 12 hours from signing the papers to leave the Big 12 to go to the Pac-12. I can't remember what happened there. So maybe if you two remember what the fall apart was there, that'd be good to share.
Yeah, I think there were some discussions with Texas and Oklahoma wanting to come to the Pac-12. I'm not sure if the Longhorn Network had something to do. Maybe that's why the deal fell apart. Of course, it's always having to do with money. But I know, pretty credible reporting, the Big 12 commissioner came to the Pac-12 and was like, hey, let's do something. Let's work something out. And at the time, Larry Scott was like, no, not really. Texas Tech doesn't really fit with our brand.
Yikes.
Yeah.
First nail in the coffin right there. There it is.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So John O says Rose Bowl is part of the expanded playoff. It will host a playoff game each year. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I expect from the Citrus Bowl. That doesn't make it. That doesn't make the Citrus Bowl any more important to me, I guess. You know, they're just now they really are just bowl games. That's fine though. That's fine. Okay. Well, any last thoughts on the Pac-12 now that we've read it, its eulogy, and now you guys have to be fans of different conferences?
Yeah, two different conferences.
Yeah, I guess my final thought, and I put this in our Discord, James, that we're in, and I think this year, for everyone saying RIP to the Pac-12, they have several teams that could sneak into the playoff this year.
Five ranked in the top 25.
Five ranked in the top 25. I think USC, great chance. They have a good schedule. Washington, really good chance. Yeah. Oregon will always be up there. And Utah there, if they can get a healthy quarterback, they have the schedule that they, even with one loss, maybe they get a good look for the playoffs. So keep an eye on the Pac-12 this year. It could be one fun final ride.
Yeah, 100% agreed. Hey, anything can happen, final year.
Yeah, I think one of them might be able to get in. But you can't convince me that USC is going to run the table until – Lincoln Riley can figure out how to get Alex Grinch to play real defense. They can play enough defense to get by during the regular season, but until I'm convinced that they can go play Georgia and actually play defense, then I don't see it from USC. I mean, Caleb Williams is good enough, but they lost to Utah twice.
Yeah, twice last season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But usually, just historically, a team 1 through 7, I believe, has typically won the national championship. USC preseason rank is number 6, so they fall right in line with there. And so, and any team outside that top 7 has usually been because they had a good quarterback, a Cam Newton at Auburn or Jameis Winston at Florida State. The best quarterbacks, I think, in the country reside in the Pac-12. So just keep an eye on them. They can make some noise. But I also, the caveat is the Pac-12 usually will eat itself and the teams will all beat each other.
Yeah, they'll all beat each other at the end. Yep.
But it's going to be a good competition.
Yep, and y'all going to be out there mad at Cal and Stanford for beating somebody they wasn't supposed to beat. Yep. And then Oregon State's going to look like they're going to run the table, and Oregon State's going to lose to Washington State or something. And it'll be over. And James Knox says, I can see record viewership in years this final season. I think you're right. I think there'll probably be a lot of people trying to make sure they see the last iteration of rivalries for quite a while.
Yeah.
So, as always, I appreciate you guys joining us. I thought it was a great conversation. We'll definitely have you back, especially as Utah is going to take on Florida. Is that that's week one, right?
Yeah, August 31st. Yeah, already took off work, so ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to keep an eye on that game because I don't think Florida's going to be very good, but I don't know. We'll see. Oregon still got a shot with Bo Nix, but Bo Nix is kind of like Jekyll and Hyde when he makes you pull your hair out sometimes. And you're like, how did he do that? And then when the game's on the line, you're like, yo, where's my guy Bo? I don't know. Such as Auburn, though. That's fine. So
don't forget Deion Sanders over at Colorado taking on TCU. So,
oh, right. Really good game. You know, I'm still – is Deion going to make a bowl game?
No.
You only got to win six. You don't think you'll win six?
Well, technically, you only really have to win five. But you have to be – you got to have high academics to have five and make a bowl game.
Colorado's supposed to be up there, right?
Yeah, they're supposed to be, but I think that's all hype right now.
We're going to see how good is his kid is at quarterback. If he can stay healthy,
real.
He's really talented.
How good is Shadur for real?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Keep my mouth shut. I'll wait till y'all finish.
All right. Well, we're going to let you guys go. We're going to transition over to some Alabama football. Thank you guys for joining us. Let me get you with the I got to hit you with the applause. So, thank you guys. I'll see you in the PSG Discord pretty soon.
You got it. Thanks for having
us. Thanks for having me. Yep. Thank you.
See you guys.
Take it easy.
All right. Well, I thought that was a good discussion. A good final nail in the coffin or a tombstone being put on the Pac-12 as a conference. Maybe the rest of them will have to go join the I was going to say the Western Athletic Conference, but they only play basketball now. So I guess the Mountain West is there.
Yeah, so I guess are they really going to drop the numbers? Like you said, Pac-12, they become something else. You know, do we have just directional stuff now?
They got to just join. They just got to be – I think they got to be absorbed by somebody else.
Can they call it, you know, wasn't it originally called like the Pacific Coast Conference or something?
I'm not sure. I do know at one point it was the Pac-8, and then it was the Pac-10, and then they changed it to the Pac-12. So being the Pacific Coast Conference would just make sense. You know, you have the Atlantic Coast Conference, you got the Pacific Coast Conference, and then the Big Ten needs to change to, I don't know. They can't even call themselves Conference USA, so.
They have to be the Midwest. Is there a Midwest?
Yeah, there is a Midwest Conference. That's where Drake played basketball.
No,
that's Missouri Valley. I'm sorry, Missouri Valley. Never mind.
We have to sell the name. That was a very good conversation. I really did think Luke was sitting in the Oregon.
I did too.
Equipment room or something. I saw all that stuff. I was like, "What?"
He said, "Nah, this is my office." So,
very nice. Pretty nice. Well, okay. Well, I know we got a couple other things we need to hit on too, because the Perry Thompson stuff, man, flipping.
Yes, that was a little bit of a shock to me, John. I hope he has some information on that, but I don't know. Maybe that's a sign of good things to come for Auburn. I guess that they're being able to actually flip guys now in state. I mean, that's a big get for them.
I didn't realize that he was like the first five-star player they've had.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was like some years, like, you know, they're getting talent, but not five-star guys. I read that not too long ago. To look back at what article it was. I was like, really? Let's say Bo Nix or somebody, maybe?
Bo Nix was a five-star quarterback? Well, I mean, I guess he played as a freshman, so that's probably true.
But yeah. This guy's good, though, man. I watched some of his film because I didn't really, you know, I really haven't done, admitted this on the Bama Standard, that haven't watched a lot of the recruitment film. Mm-hmm. People, I don't really do that part as far as us preparing and getting on a recruiting trail. And I did watch the film, man. That dude, that's a big old dude, man. And he's fast, too. He's got some pretty good ride,
yeah.
You know, to see him just returning kicks. And you can just see that it doesn't even look like he's running fast, but he's just running away from everybody, you know, with those long strides. So that's a pretty big loss.
It is, but Alabama had brought in a couple of extra. Well, they have other receivers in the class. I'm going to kind of just look it up real quick because again, I knew this, but I've forgotten. Now I'm unprepared. But in the 2024 class, I mean, they've got a 4-star Jameer Grimsley. They got Rico Scott, who is from Pennsylvania. Also another 4-star guy. And they had French? Jamie French? Is he a 2025 guy? Is that? Okay, so they also have Ryan Williams, who is a 5-star receiver from Alabama. And then, yes, Jamie French, who's a 4-star from Jacksonville, Florida. So there's, I don't know, maybe he saw quicker playing time over at Auburn.
Come in and be the man. Yeah, I think that's the way they sold him, right? Isn't that what he said? That they were really trying to convince him to come be the catalyst?
I mean, and that would make sense. I mean, Alabama's got quite a few young freshmen, or I guess they'd be sophomores now, academically sophomores at least, with Chaz Preston and I can't even remember. There's a whole starting five that are all like freshmen or sophomores now. You know, it's Ja'Cory Brooks and Jermaine Burton are the two old ones, and then everybody else kind of seems like they're all sophomores or maybe even redshirt freshmen. So that could be part of it.
Yeah, but they're all dropping the ball, according to
Sabin. Right. Yeah. So I was going to ask you about that. Do you think if Sabin is saying this in the press conference, the way he said it, of like, you know, because obviously it was a message to the receiver room. How bad do you think the drop, like how many drops do you really think they have? Like, is it unconscionable? Like they're not catching the ball at all? Or is it, you know, one out of every five balls? I'm trying to figure out how concerned is Saban. Is this the, hey, we just have to be better, Saban? This is annoying. This is not to our standard. Or is this like cause for concern?
I think my guess would be that it's too much. I think when you get to that level or that standard, the amount of drops should go down. You know, I think you can understand maybe an overthrow is kind of reaching longer, but I'm kind of reading into it that they're hitting their hands and they're dropping.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought too, because I thought if it was overthrows and bad balls, there'd be more of like him more saying, again, hey, we got to have a quarterback that's going to take over and lead the team and do this, that, and this other thing. We're still looking, and no, I'm not going to tell you who's the leader in the quarterback room, but to just kind of single out the receivers in general. It kind of seems like he's saying that that's that room's problem, not particularly on the quarterbacks.
Yes, and I can see that being very frustrating to that if you're what's a high number of drops in practice by a single individual. I would think if you're, I don't know, maybe we have to put an over or under on that. But I think if you drop, I'm going to say 4, a single individual.
Mm-hmm.
If he kept dropping the ball, and you're like, you know, 3-4 times in a practice, I'm going to take your input on that. I think that would be concerning to me, too.
Yeah, that's fair. You said 4. In my head, I was thinking 3. I was thinking 3 was right at the line of like, all right, you drop 3, and I'm kind of looking at you like, hey, like, pick it up. and you drop four, and you're like, okay, are we going to have to – is there anybody else we got out here that can can play a little bit today?
And I think that would get you to a room. And I think he's probably losing a little bit of patience when it comes to how people are transferring, asking for money, doing whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've even held to a different standard that, and then we come in here and ask me for no change and you keep dropping the ball. I'm not saying that that's what happened, but I'm just thinking of the mindset. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're going to put us under the pressure that I'm going to transfer or I'm not getting playing time, but hell, you can't even catch the damn ball. That's a problem when you're trying to win national championships. You know, they're not just trying to get to playoffs and be good. They're trying to get back.
Right.
Get a chip on the shoulder, going in ranked number four. You know, that was the last time we've been out of the top two or three.
Yeah, it's probably been a minute.
You know, so it's a lot of talk there, but if you can't throw it, I know we want to. I'm going to assume we really are going to run the ball more than we have. But if those guys aren't catching the ball, it don't matter what quarterback you have back there. If they're just...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to catch it, then who cares who's throwing it?
Yeah, that's right.
So, speaking of who's throwing it, I have, and I'm trying to find it because I'm trying to find what the odds are.
You got a bold prediction? Is that what you're saying?
Nah, it's not a bold prediction, but I did try to put my money where my mouth was. Yes. Okay. So, I did indeed actually place a bet. I bet $33.34 to win $100.02. So I got this. The odds are +300 on who the starting quarterback is going to be for game one of the season. So who is going to take the first snap?
Burrow.
That's who I picked. And the only reason I picked him, well, is because I think that's the only one that makes sense, is game one, snap one is going to be the incumbent, because that's just like how Saban works. But he was the only one with plus odds. They had, I don't know if I can go back and see the odds now, but I think they had Simpson at like -150.
What?
And they had Buckner as the next guy at -100 or 110 or something like that. And I saw, on Reddit, actually, somebody was like, hey, I just saw a line that it's +300 on Jalen Milroe being the starting quarterback. And I was like, what? Right. It's like, yeah, let me go ahead and how much do I have to bet to win $100? Because that right there, it just, no matter what happens, I think Jalen Milroe is gonna get the start against Utah State or whoever it is. Now maybe he doesn't start against Texas,
right? It could change,
but to start the season, I don't know, maybe, but at +300, maybe that's maybe somebody knows something that I don't know. But I felt a little bit better because I read an article of some guys who – some media people who were at the scrimmage. And, you know, Saban said he doesn't really care about the stats or whatnot, you know, all the things. But basically what he said was of the three, Milroe still looked the best. He won't say that he looked great, but of the three, Milroe still was – in his eyes, the better looking quarterback, followed by Ty Simpson. And then he said, in his words, Tyler Buckner looked bad enough to where he don't have a shot, which is exactly what I said when he transferred in. And I was like, there is no chance. Maybe I need to go. I need to go find the episode when I said this. When I said there's no chance that Tyler Buchner is going to be the starting quarterback.
You did say that because I said he was going to be the starting quarterback eventually, but he doesn't make that move. He doesn't leave with the starting job in Notre Dame to come to Bama and sit the bench. That's bad business.
Yeah, it might be bad business, but I feel like they didn't tell him to, you know, because like I said, I watched the press conference with Tommy Rees, and they were talking about, and they were asking him, like, how long did it take you to learn Nick Saban's offense? And he was like, you know, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to put my own spin on it, those kind of things. And I remember Bill O'Brien went on his exit interview. I guess it was not exit interview, but it was when he got to the Patriots. Bill O'Brien was saying, hey, you know, year one, I was trying to learn the offense, and year two was kind of when I really started feeling like I knew what was going on in the offense. You know, I had to do a lot of studying and whatnot. And that's when I was like, all right, so Tyler Buchner probably thinks that because his OC is leaving, that he's just going to come in and he's going to, like, have a leg up because he knows Tommy Rees's offense. And I was like, I feel like somebody didn't tell him that this is not Tommy Rees's offense, that Tommy Rees gets to call plays.
Yeah. So do you think, how would this affect, say he doesn't start Tyler Buchner and he wants to transfer out? Will he get hit with this new transfer rule that he won't be able to just bolt?
He absolutely would get hit with this. And I'm glad you also brought this up, because now I get to tell a little bit of a story about how the NCAA has done a player wrong, I think, when it comes to the transfer rule. So this, I can't remember what his name is, and somebody will have to fact check me. Let me make sure I'm not missing any comments, because I got. Okay. There was a guy who he goes to college in 2022 or in 2020, right? And unfortunately, the 2020 season, they canceled the football season. Or maybe he was there in 2019. Regardless, he ends up transferring out of that school because they were not playing football in 2020. So the 2021 season comes around, and he's at a different school, getting ready to play football. Before the season, they fold the football program.
Dang.
So he transfers again to somewhere else, that just anywhere that'll take him that he can play football. So he's getting ready to play football again, and I think then he gets hurt, can't play the season, and decides, okay, maybe this is just not my path. He rehabs over the offseason, and he decides, I'm just going to transfer to whatever the local college is, whatever football school is that is closest to where I came from. I just be close to family, because I went to one school I wanted to go to, they canceled football, I went to another school, they folded the whole program, I get hurt, and I'm all the way across the country, I'm just going to go home, so at least I can try to play one more time. My eligibility still ain't up because I haven't even played 2 years, and then I got a medical waiver. So I just want to go home. And the NCAA says, he transferred before they made this new rule. He's transferred. He's been accepted. Fall camp started. He gets to fall camp. And 3 days in the fall camp, the NCAA says, hey, based on this new rule we just passed, even though you've already been enrolled and transferred and did all your paperwork, you are no longer eligible to play this year. So now he's going to miss a fourth season of playing because he transferred under the old rules, trying to get home to play football. They passed the new rules, and then they retroactively revoked his waiver.
Can't do that.
Well, they did. So he will not be playing football this year either.
Must be at a school they don't like.
Yeah, I have to go back and figure out who it was and where he was. I want to say it's North Carolina. I want to say he's at North Carolina. Wow. But
must be pretty cool.
I thought that was yeah, I know some people are like the new, you only get the transfer one time rule. The second time it's got to be extenuating circumstances. But I would say this kid's journey definitely matches the extenuating circumstances.
Yeah.
And the fact that he transferred before this rule was in place.
Yeah, I don't know how they can do the retroactive, because he didn't, like, he knew what was coming down the chute probably anyway. He
right.
Like, I got to be liable to transfer before they make this rule. I thought that was actually in play. But that kind of sucks. Feel bad for the kid. She could have went to the military or something by now and been back.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to spend 4 years just trying to find a place to play football, and
so does he still have 4 years of eligibility?
I think he probably has three. I don't know if he got a medical for the injury or whatever, but he's got enough. He's got enough years. You know, it's not just one. I know he's got multiple years.
They got an automatic year in 2019, 2020 anyway, right?
Yeah.
You
get a makeup year. That they basically said that year don't count. You can play another year if you want to.
He might be playing
until he's 32. Well, no, there's some guys out here that's on. There's another guy that's on his eighth season of college football.
Yeah, it's time to go. You're like,
because he had two knee injuries and then the COVID year and. And then he got redshirted. I think it was two knee injuries, and he both got medical waivers for. Then COVID happened, and then he got redshirted. So he got basically 4 years of school. Now he's in grad school about, working on his, I guess.
Doctorate.
Yeah, I know. And say, hey, well, I still got 4 years of eligibility left to play. So he's going to be like 28. He's probably my age when he's going to be done.
Mm-hmm. What's Luke saying down here? So you got to transfer to Miami. You talk about Miami. Come on, man. Miami is a hurricane like anybody.
Shoot. Luke says Oregon had a tight end transfer to Miami who has been in college since 2017. Good Lord.
Yeah, that's a long time, boss. But they're not going to win down there either. I don't think. Not yet. I don't know if Crystal Ball is the answer. We'll see. Well, we're going to see. We didn't even talk about what's going to happen with the ACC. But I think they're next. They're going to have them.
Yeah, well, I guess we got 2 minutes. They had a chance to pick up Cal and Stanford, and then like 12 of the 14 schools is like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
Luke says Miami won't. Crystal Ball is a good recruiter, but a horrible coach, in his opinion. And of course, he's a Ducks fan. So, their offense ain't looking great. Their line play might be pretty good, but everybody else ain't.
I think Clemson and Florida State are going to jump ship. I don't know which one yet or where they're going to go.
Well, Florida State is definitely trying.
Florida State's going to go. Clemson might come on over.
Well, the problem that they have right now is that their deal runs through 2036. So they still got like 13 years left on their deal, which means like right now I think the buyout is somewhere like $500 million to get out.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's why Florida State's trying to get some kind of hedge fund to raise private equity so they can pay it and leave.
I don't even know if there's anybody else over there that SEC would want or some other.
I think they'd probably want to take Florida State, Clemson, Duke, and UNC.
Who? To go to the Big Ten?
No, go to the SEC. Because I think the SEC would be looking like, okay, we can get two smart schools in Duke and UNC. They're okay enough, they're mid-tier football programs, but they're going to be top-tier basketball programs.
So you think we want to try to elevate that, or would be a tougher fight to go to the Big 12 now that Arizona will be in there thinking basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Arizona State. I don't know how good they are in basketball. But Baylor.
Luke says FSU might need Al Hilal to bail them out of the conference. So Al Hilal is a Saudi Arabian football team, soccer team, that has been throwing absolutely stupid money. Remember we had talked about Lionel Messi? Yes. Paying him $700 or $1 billion a year or whatever. They've been throwing around hundreds of millions of dollars to teams to get players.
Totally off topic. Now let's go.
Okay.
Is this league too easy for him, or is it that good? Is it like a pro guy going over to Canadian Football League, or you know, a pro NFL guy going to play for the
XFL? this was the question that you should have asked Luke and Ed, because Ed is, I think, totally on the side of. Right now, they're playing in the League's Cup. It's like this mid-season tournament that nobody cares about. And they're not playing their starters right now. So he thinks that it's – I think he would say it's going to be getting harder for him. Luke says – how many zeros is that? 1,000,000%. He's playing against college kids. So there you go. There's your answer. That's what I would say. I mean, these guys, the Americans that are playing on the national team these days don't play in MLS anymore. So like, you know, Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey and Tim Howard and those guys, they were playing in MLS at one point. These guys, Christian Pulisic, Tim Weah, Balogun, those guys that you can name on the U.S. men's national team, Reyna, they don't play here anymore. They went to Europe. They play over there now. So, yeah, I think Messi coming over here is a step down. This is his Canadian league.
Yeah, I just don't understand it, though, for all the hype and like, oh, you know. It's exciting and it's fun, but in the back, we're going like, for real, though, man? I mean.
Yeah, this is like if Jordan went over to China and played in a league when he was done instead of coming back to the Wizards. Yeah, probably. I think it's like that. Luke also says Messi got a good TV rights deal, unlike the Pac-12. Yeah. Messi actually got a cut of the streaming revenue himself from Apple TV for the entire MLS league.
Pretty good change.
Yeah. Messi is doing just fine. Well.
Okay, brother. Well, that's good, man. I appreciate it. Luke, thank you again for coming on and being a special guest. We always appreciate it. And I don't need but one pair of those shoes. Some of those bright yellow ones.
Yeah, he's what are you? You size 13?
Yeah. I don't even know if I need to wear. I just want to set him up like him. I think it'd be kind of cool. Have it behind me too. Like, where you got them more shoes?
Kayvon Thibodeau would be mad at you after what you said about him in that last video.
Well, you see what happened. I don't know. He came into his own a little bit this past year.
Yeah.
We'll see what it looked like this year. So, but anyway, man, we do appreciate it. I appreciate you too, JT. I know you got the football. You got a big scrimmage tomorrow. You got to get ready for. That's just messing with your producer skills. You're in that playbook a little bit too much.
Yeah, now you know, I got different problems to solve. It's been fun, but you know, it's just you know how offensive coordinators are, and especially when you got a run game coordinator too. It's like you trying to get the basics in. Hey, let's just give me some 3-by-1, give me some 2-by-2, and it's like day four, and they're motioning. They got two tight ends. They got a wing. They motion it all over the place. They motioning their trips into the boundary, you know.
Quads.
Yes.
They're going all unbalanced. Can we just line up play football, please? You know, cut all these motions out.
Yeah. So now I'm sitting here like, okay, you know, we they come out in 2x2, and we call the strength to the field because that's where all the space is, and then they motion the trips into the boundary, and I don't want to run my nickel all the way across the field because they're just going to snap the ball as we're doing that, and we're going to be misaligned. So we're just bumping everybody over, but then I don't want my will linebacker having to carry somebody deep. It's just, I was like, all right, I got to figure out what we're going to do about this. It's a, that's just the problem we're going to have until we get some film on somebody who actually does that.
That's right. Script it up, man. Script it up. But, okay. Well, we do appreciate it. I hope everybody has enjoyed the show. Make sure you guys, if you listen to the recorded piece, we do appreciate all the downloads, the things that you give us. Go ahead and find us on YouTube, though, and subscribe to us. Hit those likes. Give us some good comments. This is good for us, man. This is really good for us. JT and I got some good things in the works here. So, you know, I kind of been teasing that stuff a little bit, but I'm really excited about what's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks and, you know, the things that we're going to be talking about, the guests we're going to be having. So it's going to be really, really good. So make sure you stay in tune with us. JT, you make sure you get yourself ready for tomorrow night. I'll be there as a boss and as a dad. I get to wear both hats tomorrow. So it'll be fun to watch, see what the guys look like. And what do you say? Cowgirls, too. Oh, yeah.
Oh, what's happened? Who? Oh. He's the Commanders fan that's about to change their name again.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to call themselves. But anyhow, thanks again, man. We're going to have a good night, call it a night. And we will be back next week. We're going to be talking a lot more college football again next week. Two guests who are, one's an OU fan and one's a Texas fan. And we need to talk about
Am I supposed to be playing your music right now? I am. There you go.
Yeah. How they actually feel about coming to the SEC. This is DJ. I'm George. He's JT. We will see you next week. Great time. Same place. Right here.